Good morning, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm here as a commissioner of the Public Service Commission to for a special meeting January 27th at 11 a.m. at the PSC headquarters on the 12th floor of the Capitol. I don't have any opening comments this morning. Do you, Commissioner Christman?
No opening comments. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk.
I would just remind myself, my colleagues, at special meetings, we are limited to the items in the agenda.
And we have several items on the agenda this morning. The special meeting prompted people to add some things that I think we had hoped to get done for yesterday's meeting, but just it's been busy around here, and staff just didn't have the time to quite get them done. So we'll deal with those this morning, and it's good to have this opportunity to do so. I'll get started with the first such item, PU-14-620. I move the commission adopt the order granting the application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity in Paradigm Midstream Services NDLLC crude oil pipeline, McKenzie and Montrail counties, public convenience and necessity case number PU-14-620.
Second.
On July 17th of 2014, Paradigm Midstream Services filed an application for a CPCNN under North Dakota Century Code 49-03.1 for a 70-mile crude oil pipeline and other facilities in McKenzie and Montrail County, North Dakota. Paradigm requests the CPCN to construct, own, and operate the pipeline. Excuse me. Known as the Sakakawea Pipeline, as a common pipeline carrier to transport crude oil from locations south of the Missouri River to transfer points located north of Missouri River. This is a major new transmission pipeline project proposal. It's 70 miles, as I just said, transporting crude oil from McKenzie County up north of the river. It will have the capacity of 230,000 barrels per day. It will feed rail loading facility near Newtown, North Dakota, and then traverse on north to Stanley Station, Enbridge's Stanley Station, where it will have the potential to feed that that large interstate transmission, oil transmission pipeline, and to markets throughout the country. This pipeline would have the potential of eliminating up to 1,000 trucks per day off of North Dakota's roads. Paradigm indicates that the pipeline serves an area which is all land within approximately 10 miles of either side of the pipeline route. And the commission had a hearing in an informal hearing last fall on this matter. We've been back and forth with the company a number of times discussing a few different things, and now we're ready to make the decision. And the commission finds in this order that public convenience and necessity will be served by the construction and operation of the pipeline because there's a need for the pipeline. The pipeline will not have an effect on other public utilities providing similar service. The proposed service will be adequate, and Paradigm has the technical, financial, and managerial ability to provide the proposed service. So I think with that, I think that concludes our review of this issue and outlines kind of the major conclusions.
Right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just add that I certainly agree with the order and happy to vote for it. It'll just be interesting to see how it plays out with us now granting PCNNs on pipelines. Never really done that before, and what that might mean for pipelines in the near future in that area and what that means for the hearing process. So I certainly support it, but it'll be interesting to see what happens down the road.
I agree. I think it's a good concept to alert other pipeline companies when they're developing pipelines. It prompts a conversation between them and us about need and capacity and a review of that process so you don't can decrease the likelihood that things are overbuilt. And so I think that it might provide a very valuable function moving ahead.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Concludes my portfolio. And Commissioner Christman, or do we add you third, second, or third? Yeah, you're second. You're next.
Good
Just one item on my portfolio. I move the commission file with the Grand Forks County District Court, Northeast Central Judicial District, for appointment as trustee and for an ex parte order to preserve trust assets until the court issues its order granting or denying the application of Grand Forks Bean Company Incorporated of Grand Forks, North Dakota, under North Dakota Century Code Chapters 60-02 and 60-04 in Public Service Commission Case Number GE-15-36.
Second.
The Grand Forks Bean Incorporated, Bean Company Incorporated, operates a grain warehouse at Grand Forks, North Dakota, and they've been doing so since October of 2005. They filed a surety bond with the commission, as required by the Century Code, in the amount of $100,000. On November 18th of 2014, so just over 2 months ago, the licensing division received a phone call from a producer inquiring about redelivery of dry edible beans that the producer had delivered to Grand Forks Bean at their warehouse in Grand Forks. The producer alleged that Grand Forks Bean had not been able to market his dry edible beans, and the producer had contacted the licensing division staff about taking redelivery of beans because Grand Forks Bean was not able to market them. The next day, on November 19th, licensing division staff contacted Grand Forks Bean to discuss the producer's request for redelivery. They talked about their current dry edible bean inventory and if it was sufficient to make redelivery to each producer that had delivered dry edible beans to their warehouse. Staff also asked them to provide copies of all available documents issued to producers for dry edible beans delivered there. Grand Forks Bean informed staff that an independent accounting business had completed a year-end review as of July 30th of 2014 and verified that there was sufficient inventory at that time to cover the dry edible bean obligation to the producers. On that same day, on November 19th, staff visited with a representative of that accounting firm and was told that that firm did not measure the dry edible bean inventory at the year-end review, and the business records were not with them. Between November 18th, that original complaint date, and December 19th of 2014, the licensing division received additional phone calls from producers that had delivered dry edible beans to that warehouse in Grand Forks. December 1st, so during that time frame, very shortly after the first complaint, a commission grain warehouse inspector visited the facility and measured the inventory and felt it was approximately 40,000 hundredweight of pinto beans. But the inspector was not able to review the records in the office at that time. Between December 19th and December 23rd, the commission received claims from 8 producers. Each producer alleged that Grand Forks Bean had not been able to market their beans or pay for the beans delivered. On December 23rd, PSC staff executed a stipulation agreeing with that the dry edible bean inventory at the facility will not be sold, redelivered, or moved from the Grand Forks facility without prior commission approval, and the Grand Forks bean will not receive additional grain, that the beans will continue to be stored in suitable facilities and in a suitable fashion to maintain the quality of the inventory, and the Grand Forks bean will continue to maintain insurance on the inventory. The stipulation provided that a violation may result in further formal commission proceedings, including the issuance of an ex parte cease and desist order against Grand Forks Bean. And although the staff is not aware of any violation, they believe that attempts to resolve this matter outside an insolvency are not possible. So on January 16th, last Friday, staff recommended the commission issue an ex parte cease and desist against Grand Forks Bean, which the commission did, ordering that Grand Forks Bean cease and desist from receiving or purchasing grain, moving any grain out of the facility that may be an asset of the trust, or failing to maintain control of potential trust assets in a matter consistent with the stipulation. Staff believes that the Century Code allows that the court may issue a temporary ex parte order to preserve or protect the assets of the trust fund until the court issues its order granting or denying this application. Staff believes that Grand Forks Bean refused, neglected, or is unable upon proper demand to make payment for grain purchased or marketed by the licensee or to make redelivery or pay for the grain. And staff believes it is in the best interest of potential claimants that the commission be appointed trustee in an insolvency proceeding under the provisions of North Dakota Century Code 60-04. Staff believes that bond proceeds may be needed to redeem outstanding receipts. Staff believes the proceeds from the credit sale contract indemnity fund may be needed to meet the licensee's obligation to any holders of credit sale contracts. And staff points out that under the Century Code, grain assets are part of the trust fund. Staff believes it is in the best interest of potential claimants that the court issue ex parte a temporary order preserving and protecting any assets and potential assets of the trust fund under the Century Code. And that concludes my comments.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just have a question here. Where in this motion or this order, this document, do we talk about the stipulation that we were discussing yesterday? Or is that a separate issue?
The stipulation was referenced.
Bring your mic a little closer, please.
No, the one we didn't do. The one we're working on, correct?
Right, not the one that we did. I got that in here, but the one we talked about.
It's a separate issue.
Okay, so tell me the steps here again then.
And put that one just aside for a minute because it's just something different. The steps are to produce the all of the formal court documents that need to be done to go with this. The affidavit is the supporting evidence, and that's why it's done first.
But to go with our request to be trustee.
To court, yes. It's an application, a motion, a notice of motion, a brief, a proposed order, the proposed temporary order, et cetera. Formal documents for filing in court. Those will all be prepared. And this stipulation is sort of a parallel thing. Because we have been working with them informally first, then under stipulation, now under a cease and desist, to get the beans marketed in the most, so that the proceeds can be maximized and so there is no detriment to the value of the assets. That the stipulation is for the purpose of working on that between now and when we may eventually be appointed. Okay. It's really not even necessarily relevant to the court. When the court appoints us trustee, either there will still be beans, because that'll happen sooner, or there will be proceeds of beans.
Right.
And when we do a report, we'll explain everything and how they got sold and what they were worth and all of that at the end, and the court will decide if we did the good job or a bad job.
Okay, so then my other question is, we're asking to be appointed as trustee and for an ex parte order to preserve trust assets. What's the second part? I mean, how is that?
The second part is just an additional thing that we have authority to do in any insolvency in order to for the court to be telling the elevator, don't do anything to the detriment of trust assets while I'm figuring out whether to appoint the commission. So it's the same kind of thing that the commission did on Friday, only it's the court doing it. It's ex parte. They have a right to a hearing afterwards. But we're saying it's stepping up the mandate from the commission telling them to the court telling them.
So the cease and desist is step one, and then we ask for this from the court.
Right.
The cease and desist does the same thing, but it's just from us.
Yes. It's okay. We don't – there are sometimes we do insolvencies where there are no assets to – at the moment to worry about protecting, mm-hmm. and so we don't ask for it in those cases.
But typically we do ask for this.
Yes, if there's assets, yes.
And then the stipulation kind of will go another way to protect those assets and preserve them yet again.
Well, right. And it's possible we won't even be involved in that stipulation. That's still an open question. But we will, under any scenario here, have the authority to approve what happens to them, because we have that under your cease and desist today, and we are going to be putting it in the request to the court, mm-hmm. at least that much in this one that we're asking the court to issue, so that there is that commission oversight over any liquidation of the beans.
And when this is my last question, when we present this type of a motion and request to the court, does it just go in their normal docket of proceedings and they get to it, or is it something that they view more urgently?
I would never speak for the court. And I would assume that just to get a case going, there is going to be a normal number of steps to process a case. When they see a request for an ex parte order, that is a trigger that somebody wants something sooner rather than later. Those ex parte means before you have a hearing with the two sides. You always have you could have a hearing with the two sides, but it comes later. But they will have to get a judge assigned first, and then that judge will look and see what this case is about, notice that ex parte order, hopefully sign it. It will not happen in a day or so. Sometimes they don't even get filed you file them, but they don't show up filed over there for a day or so.
Okay. Thank you.
I think during that discussion, I thought of a couple things that maybe talking to producers a lot, I might be aware of, but just to highlight why this case is maybe slightly different than some of the other insolvencies that we've dealt with here. These beans are just a lot different to deal with than spring wheat or sunflowers or something. They take maintenance when they're being stored, and they should not be moved, at least most people seem to feel, when it's pretty cold out, like maybe down, say, 10 degrees or something. So a lot of normal winter days, they probably can't be transported. Of course, if we are slow about things as we edge towards spring, then all of a sudden it's load restrictions and one thing and another. So having nice winter days is kind of the opportunity to potentially move them. Plus, they apparently need to be raked occasionally in their storage, and they deteriorate with time. So moving this along fairly quickly is important. And that's, I will say, on behalf of staff, worked very hard to get this much done, and there's more paperwork to be done, but we really pushed to get this prepared for this meeting opportunity. And so I commend staff for that. And it's pretty important that we do move this along as quickly as possible to try and be appointed trustee. Because as this points out, as I pointed out and taking some highlights from the affidavit, the first claim came in November already. We've had other claims since then. It does not seem to be resolving itself among the people over there. And so even though our process can be pretty slow, I think we do need to accept that reality that our process will have to be followed and try to move it as quickly as possible. But I think waiting any longer is not a good choice. It just doesn't seem to be getting resolved.
When the when and if the court approves this and appoints us as trustee, after that point, then we allow any other members of the public to file. There's a time period. Is that the trigger point for that, when other members of the public can file requests to be part of the proceeding?
That's correct. Once the judge executes an order, the commission will provide notice of entry of that order and a notice to file claims, and that will go out to any name that we are aware of from the record, any potential claimant, and then it also gets published in the newspaper in the county where the elevator is located for 2 consecutive weeks, and then any claimant has 45 days after that second publication to file a claim.
Okay. Well, and one more thing, Madam Chair. I pointed this out, but I just wanted to highlight it. In this affidavit, I mentioned that staff believes that the bond proceeds may be needed, also that the indemnity fund may be needed, because, and I just want to highlight this for anyone who might be listening, who, especially potential producers, at this point, we don't know what exactly could be out there for claims, and so we're kind of operating under the assumption that there could be valid credit sale contracts, there could be other claims that would come from, would be paid out from the trust fund. And so at this point, we just don't know. And of course, the trust fund and preserving the beans, that's all very important for any claims that are not valid credit sale contracts. If there are valid credit sale contracts, any payments out of there would come from the indemnity fund and be 80%, not more, not less, up to the $280,000.
Do we have a dollar amount on the 8 claims that have been filed, or do we not talk about that until we verify that they're legitimate? Or
approximately from when Tim went out and did the measurement, he determined that using a value that we put on the date that he did that measurement of $22 a hundredweight, so the value of the beans is approximately $870,000. And doing the same thing to what the records that Tim saw, what he believes the people are entitled to, it's about $686,000 worth of obligation to the producers.
$686,000. So the value of the beans in storage is $870,000, and the value of the claims is approximately $690,000.
That's correct, and that is based on determining that what Tim saw from the beans, I mean, you're not able to get to the bottom of the pile,
right.
And from the beans that he was able to view, he class listed them or identified them as a number one bean, and as we move the beans, we will see if they're number ones throughout the bottom of the pile.
Well, that's the challenge, is as you tell you, moving,
right.
You damage them, and to actually collect the $22.
Mm-hmm. That's true, and at the time Tim was out there on December 1, there were staff there from Grand Forks Bean that were constantly monitoring those beans and doing what they needed to do to keep them in condition.
Mm-hmm. And those are the initial claims. We have to make,
yes,
sure to say that there could be additional claims.
Those are the ones that we're aware of today.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. Commissioner Culk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last but not least, the point of the special meeting. We now get to that. All right. I move the commission issue a notice of continued hearing, continuing the public hearing scheduled for today, January 22nd, 2015, to March 19th, 2015, in EDNF Renewable Development, Inc., Maricourt Wind Project Power Project, citing application case number PU08932.
Second.
You'll notice by the case number PU08, this thing was first filed in 2008, so it's not like this wind farm hasn't been around for a long time, and it's interesting, the background. In June of 2011, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility to Anexco to develop up to 150 megawatts of wind power using 100 GE 1.5 megawatts turbines. In October of last year, EDNF Renewable, basically doing business as an EXCO, filed an application for a revised site plan. We had a hearing scheduled for this on December 22nd. That was a bad weather day. We couldn't get down there. The company couldn't get down there. And today, while it is nice in Bismarck, we received a call yesterday from Ashley. The airfield down there was closed, 8 inches of snow and ice. The company couldn't get in. They were trying to work around plans to fly into South Dakota and drive up. We were trying to figure out how to get down there. The public would have had to also have been there, so it just didn't make sense to have the hearing. So this order today continues the hearing to March 19th, 2015 at 11 o'clock, which is a different time than we had the last time we had it scheduled at City Hall in Ashley. The later start time, I think I heard Jerry talking about their plan now, is we're just going to plan on driving down there. Is that where we're at?
We need to discuss that yet, I think.
Okay. But the point is, today's order is to continue the hearing so we can get it out there for publication, and we're scheduled now for March 19th at 11 a.m.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, just to make our discussion points clear for people that might be listening in, while the case started in 2008, it was handled in a reasonable time manner, and things were taken care of by the commission at that time. Then the company chose not to do anything for years, and now have come back with a revised plan that they've applied to us with. It's not that the commission has had something for 6.5 years.
No, great point. When the commission issued the order, it was for the 100 GE turbines, and then they requested to change the turbine size, which changed the location. You're exactly right, Commissioner. Great point. And certificates are good for 4 years, so they're actually getting up to their window on some of this.
Especially if we keep putting out the hearings.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Alana, can I ask a quick question of you? Since it is discussion around this thing, could we entertain Jerry's question about travel at this time, or is that a separate discussion? Or is that close enough to this?
Yeah, well, I think it's close enough. Plus, I also think it's more like scheduling.
Okay. We'll pick that another time then.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's the exception for those kinds of things. But
thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.